Hi, I'm Elena Silverman, presenting my Boundaries podcast. First off, I want you to imagine a life where everyone judges your skills objectively. That would be great, right? Nothing for life, or even simply a childhood, but that was not the case. Here is Lee Silverman, a grown-up whose life is markedly full of people who liked making assumptions about him.
One of the earliest times where I remember being underestimated, where I knew that's what it was in that sense, was actually a camp. We were at a Jewish camp called Frontier Day Camp under the JYCs. Am I being recorded?
Mm-hmm.
The JYCs. We were going there for free because SAFTA couldn't afford it. And it was a CIT. It was interesting because I was part of the JYCs. There was a neighborhood version in Mount Airy down the street from where I used to live. And I could go there after school and do things. We had activities. And actually, the reason I went to camp was because some kid from school went, and I wanted to go to the camp. So Safta arranged for it, and she got a scholarship for me because she was too poor. But I was a CIT with Beth, my sister Beth. Mira was there too, but she was too young to be CIT. Beth and I were practically raised as twins. You know, it was 2 years apart. And we were both CITs. And there was this... Something was going on where we were upset about how they were treating... I had the brainiac idea of having a CIT strike. Now, the woman, the director of the camp, was a woman named Rose. She really liked me. She was an old lady. She was like my grandmother old kind of lady. But I was a good kid all the time. I was always, you know, followed the rules, always did, you know, the homework assignments, got upset if things didn't go right with it. But that doesn't mean I don't have that side of me where I don't like injustice, you know, or whatever I would perceive as a kid, especially. So I hatched this idea to have a CIT strike. I told Beth about it. I told some of my friends about it. She told a bunch of her friends. Later on, I find out that there was a couple of the cool CITs.
Oh, no.
And actually, it was funny because I became friends with them later in life, and I put two and two together. So they were. In fact, do you know there were at the synagogue?
Mm-hmm.
Helene's brother was one of these cool CITs.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's really funny.
I've learned since.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
How are the CITs being, like, treated?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know. They wanted us to do more counselor work, and of course we weren't getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying to be there. Well, I wasn't paying because I was under scholarship. Technically, somebody's paying for us to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So while we should be getting CIT, counselor and training stuff, we're also kids that should still be getting camp stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think they wanted us like to guard the pools more, and spend more time with certain bunks versus going out and doing activities for ourselves or with our group. So you're supposed to do that, but I think they like were adding to it. I'm not exactly sure why. I don't remember. I probably did then. I don't remember now. So the cool CITs, remember, and Beth was one of them. She was the pretty girl.
Who are you?
But she was... I was a goofy guy. I was a geek.
Yeah, I was a vampire kid.
Anyway, so I get... Beth says, comes to me and tells me that so-and-so, I'm not going to use the guy's name, said... She said, we're talking about the CIT strike. And the guy said, well, don't tell your brother about it, because you know how he is. And Beth said to him, are you kidding? It was his idea in the first place.
Yes.
And it blew this guy's mind. They're like, not me.
Why would he think it's not you? So it's because you were like the good student?
I'm goody two-shoes. Another time, I can remember being underestimated in high school. I was really trying hard to get on the track team. Never ran track before high school. There was a lot of things about high school for me. It was different because a lot of people had done things like they'd been on soccer teams.
Mm-hmm.
So then they could play for school because they'd always played soccer with some sort of organized activity. Baseball, the same thing. Never had any of that. Never did that. I don't know if I'm sure exactly why. Well, partially it was my dad was never in the house, but I don't think he would have even done that stuff. He wouldn't have thought about it. My mom was too busy trying to make a living. There's no money, so you can't just pay to go do things. I remember one time she bought a baseball glove with me because she won a $15 lottery ticket one time, and she used it to get a baseball glove with me. But I was trying off the track. I was doing the 330 hurdles, which is 330 yards, intermediate hurdles.
Oh, gosh.
So most of these guys running track had run track in some sort of neighborhood thing. I had never had that. And most of them were probably about a foot taller than me in high school. I was really busting my butt to do it, and I didn't make the cut. At least I learned later on I didn't make the cut, but my name was on the board.
Yeah? That was awesome.
So, well, no, what had happened was the head coach who made the decision didn't put me on there.
Well, why not?
I don't know what his reasons were. The assistant coach saw my name wasn't on there and put it on there. I don't know if he did it without the head coach knowing or he said something to him later on. But the assistant coach at some point said to me, yeah, your name wasn't up there. I'm not sure why that happened. I made sure it was up there.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, I ran. That's how I ran track for 2 years.
Yeah, I'll tell people.
3 years. I didn't run track my senior year because I started teaching at Heber School. But I did all right. I ran okay.
Hey, you're good enough for them to bump you onto there, so.
Well, that was because I showed a lot of heart. But for some reason, the head coach didn't see it. The assistant coach saw it. And I still remember that to this day.
It's called
that. No. No, you're missing the point on that. The point on that is that somebody actually had faith in my ability, which apparently I was being underestimated by the head coach, but he saw that I had all this heart to try to do something with. Similarly with fencing, I had joined the men's team as a walk-on because I had taken a fencing class at Temple, and the teacher of the fencing class had been a women's fencer at Temple. And he says, you've got some talent, especially for somebody who's never done it. The men's team takes walk-ons. They let you come on the team, and they'll train you, and if you get good enough, they'll actually let you participate in their meets. But they don't mind you coming in and trying out. And if you're not, ready, they'll train you. I go, that sounds cool. So I go and to the men's team thing, and they let me on, and the coach gives me a lesson, and it was okay, and nothing great. And I start practicing with them, and learning how to do it, more than just what was in the class. And the assistant coach there always says, if you really want to get better, there's Maestro Chizar over at Penn.
Mm-hmm.
And you should take lessons with him. And I said, okay. So went over to the University of Penn, found the gym where the Maestro was, and I went, and he had a club on two nights a week, Tuesdays and Thursday nights. It wasn't for the school, it was this club.
Mm-hmm.
People from the school could fence there too, but if you weren't in the school, then you could still go and fence. You pay some sort of membership. And depending if he liked you or thought you were good enough, he might give you lessons too, but some assistant coach might. So I go there and I sit in the corner. If you're watching those old Chinese movies, young novice idiot, goes and just watches.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there. An hour and a half watching Maestro give lessons sitting on the wall. Finally, Maestro, he kind of remembers this guy's in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Takes off his mask, Hungarian accent, says something to me like, "Who are you? What are you doing?" kind of a thing.
Why are you sitting in my corner?
What are you doing? I said, I introduced myself. I said, "Hi, I'm Lee Silverman." Jim Otto, who was the assistant coach, suggested I come and watch and maybe join your club and ask if I could take lessons with you. So he says, "Do you want to quick? Here's your." Anyway, so Maestro says something like, "Do you have equipment with you? Take us now." I don't think I brought it. Well, maybe I did. I remember. At some point, he gives me my first lesson.
Mm-hmm.
He says, okay, you'll come back next time.
You've been accepted.
Well, it was funny because people were really surprised that he gave me a lesson. It was almost like Ariel and Robbie, because she was 3 years old, clinging to his foot. and we didn't know that he was some great Olympic coach kind of guy. And we said, can you take lessons with you? He said, sure. All these people were freaking out that he gave Ariel lessons because there's people waiting in line to take lessons.
Wow.
Like a waiting list. And he started just giving me lessons because he thought she was cute, I guess. I don't know. And then you got into that. He liked our family. I don't know what... We didn't have a clue who he was. Later on...
He probably appreciated that, too.
I think that was part of it. We were complete in the skating
world. But in a good sense.
So, anyway, he starts giving me lessons, and fencing season starts, and I think after the first meet, or after the second meet, maybe not even, maybe it was the first meet, I'm a starter in the third foil. There's three of each weapon. I'm the third foil. And bounced some guy that had been the guy that started from the year before.
That's awesome.
And I'm losing. I lose a lot. Because I'm an idiot. It's new. We know this stuff, but I guess I was better than this other guy. So, but the other part is I had this really good form. It was just a matter of connecting my brain to the point and to hitting people at the right time. And then I start winning. I start getting better. Six months later, it's summertime. From when I started to then, it's summertime. And the Keystone State Games, which at the time were the state championships, were held. And I entered into the under-19 foil. I also entered into the senior foil, too, because I could. But I entered in the under-19 foil. And the night before our meet, our tournament, it's like a week-long event, like a mini-Olympics for Pennsylvania. Right, so there's all these other sports going on, not just fencing. And there's these other fencers in the under-19. We're all hanging out in the hotel, just kind of like in the hallway the night before, just like... A lot of them all knew each other from other competitions, because these guys have been fencing since they were five. And here's me fencing for 6 months. None of them knew me. And I let them all know. I'm new. I haven't been fencing 6 months. So they're all like, okay. And get out there. And I beat the guy that was the under-19 national champion.
Mm-hmm.
You and I become friends later on, too, because he used to fence himself at Chisar's also.
Was he pissed about it?
I think his parents were more upset than me. There were some of the other guys that were really pissed because they swore to God that since I was new, they'd be able to clock me easy.
That's not very nice.
Well, they underestimated me. I came out and beat them. Because I might have been new, but I wasn't bad. Wasn't great.
We weren't bad.
But I was also, I guess, prodigal and was like a prodigy with it. It came naturally to me. To do it, he's sticking somebody with a sword. Natural, it's not necessarily.
Great skill set.
But that was the thing, though. Like, one of the reasons I think I beat them the way I did at that competition was because they had underestimated. They all figured 6 months, he's new, doesn't know crap. These guys have been fencing all their lives, and I beat them. And then I see it in the legal stuff all the time. I work for the state. Always underestimate. If you're a state employee, if you're a state attorney, you're lazy, you're stupid, you don't know bumpkins. And so I started using it. I let my eyeballs roll around the back of my head. I ask them questions so they think I'm even more stupid. And then they tell me their case, you know. Well, no, this is what we're talking about. But at on one of these things, I acted like I didn't know anything. And I was raising dumb questions. And clearly, Mr. Silverman doesn't understand this case. Let me explain it. And he'd give me the whole thing. But it was funny because he completely underestimated it. But it went from he doesn't understand a damn thing to and realize that. But I still do that.
It seems like a pretty consistent thing. Why do people keep underestimating you?
Well, I'm not a big stature guy. I can be Pollyannish at times. I laugh at stuff probably at inopportune moments. I find humor in a lot of stuff that people, you know, a lot of people don't have humor and they get upset with that. They have pre-expectations, preconceived notions, and prejudices because I'm Jewish, I'm white, and don't forget, I live most of my time in the black community. So it's not like I'm white in the majority, I've always been white in the minority. You know? Which, that's alright.
I'd like to thank Mr. Lee Silverman for letting me record his stories and post them online. Thanks again.